Blog Talk Radio.
And we're back on the air. I do apologize for that.
Walk in the blood, yeah. I can see clearly. Oh, Lord.
Rhonda, are you there? Seem to be having some difficulties trying to get Rhonda connected again.
She's
Rhonda.
Live. She's,
I'm here.
She's live.
I'm here.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Brother Ozzy. Okay. So, sorry about that technical difficulty, but we're back and we're going to dive right back into where we were. So you were talking about this revolutionary. You were talking about Jesus as a revolutionary
Jesus.
versus baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of folks out there still pray to baby Jesus. You do realize that, right?
I do, and they believe, they hail his mother as queen of the universe.
Yes, and a lot of folks have this very passive, meek, mild, genteel image of this revolutionary who came to shake up all type of systems, right?
Yeah.
So I always laugh, and I have to be honest with you, I find it very funny when I'm in conversation with people and I listen to their perception, which they're entitled to, their perception of this meek, mild, and genteel Jesus, or this infantile Jesus who is a whole grown man at 33, and given 33 during the time that he was on earth, that was old.
That was old.
Okay? I mean, old. You live into 33, that's old. But instead, they choose to see him as this very mild-mannered Clark Kent type of individual. I wonder how they reconciled the passage where he was up in there beating up folks and turning over tables and whooping them with a belt, but I digress. So, so we're going to move on. The next question is, part of the question is, was his mission redemption or revolution? Was not his mission redemption and revolution? To that, I would say it was. It's a both and.
Yeah.
I think it was revolutionary because he was coming to disrupt a system that was in place, an organized religion that man had bastardized by the time he showed up on the scene. Would you agree?
He was an innovator. Jesus was a social innovator. You didn't know that?
No, I agree.
He came to disrupt the norms that had been put in place to further the social evolution of people. But we have a hard time letting go. And we have a harder time seeing him as a rebel, as a revolutionary, because we need him to be this meek and mild. Because that causes us not to have these face the controversies that we have within ourselves.
So
go ahead.
So then, is it fair to say that the revolutionaries that we see today that are coming to disrupt the system of white supremacy, are they not more aligned and in the image of this Jesus Christ?
I think that's a looking at parts versus wholes. But I would say yes, in a man's life. But very much so. He wasn't passive.
No.
He wasn't passive at all. He wasn't aggressive, but he was assertive. and he was very sure of himself. He was certain of his purpose, and he held true to the promise. And so, again, when we have to develop or hold on to certain ideals or concepts, mm-hmm. what purpose is it serving us? See, if I believe that Jesus was a revolutionary,
mm-hmm.
and that if I believe that Jesus' skin was dark and his hair was coarse, that don't really fall in line with what the white man told me. I hate to keep doing this, but I have to keep going back to the true reference point that impacts how we believe, what we believe, and how we act or respond to what we are responding to, whether we know that we are or not. So
right.
if I believe that he is, as the Bible described him, bronze
mm-hmm.
skin, woolly hair. He was a carpenter
mm-hmm.
trade, so he wasn't no small, frail, thin man. But that's not how he was presented to me. That's not the images that have been given to me. So then if I believe that, then did I believe a lie when it comes to the whole of the religion?
Okay, so
it's much easier to
mm-hmm.
skip over all of that,
right,
and pretend that that's not relative, but it's relative. Because
it is relative.
if they took the word Christian from the root word Christ, and I'm supposed to be becoming like him, what's going on with me with this passive nature that I have? That this complacency,
right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. If I'm supposed to be disrupting norms, because that means I gotta act responsibly. That means there are calls that I have to answer. But somehow we've gotten content, and we've become a generation that bought into getting the American pie and the American dream. By whose standards did that American who determined what that American dream was? Was that designed for me? Is that something that I need to be chasing? And I'm not condemning people for wanting to have nice lifestyles. I'm just putting a question out there to the people.
Right.
Are you chasing after a piece of the pie, and at what cost? When there's a higher calling for you to disrupt these and impact these social injustices that are happening. Because now if I accept that, then I got to be responsible to that. See, I don't want to be deemed my brother's keeper. Because to be responsible for him means I'm responsible for the whole of him. Then I got to really live true religion. But I don't want to do that. This is easier. You know, just go to this church, listen to these people for
right.
a couple hours, come on out, work hard, buy my house, get my car, it's me and mine, with, you know, da-da-da-da. And but by whose standard? Who told
right.
you that was something that you needed to chase? Who told you that pie was even for you? So we're so busy chasing the American dream, forgetting that we weren't even American by nature. Just a question.
see this right here. This is getting good. Hold on a minute. Let me pull this up. Is the modern church offering universal salvation or a halfway house condemnation?
That was good.
I know.
That was real good. Bible tells us the church is supposed to be the bride of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, God, dog it, I wouldn't come back for this thing.
Right. Right.
Yeah. All churches aren't bad. I always say that. There
right.
are some churches that are doing true missions. There are some churches that live true religion. That their main focal point is the community. They respond responsibly to their communities. They exist. What we often have portrayed before us, and rather the media does it, or as you said earlier in the show, we do it to ourselves by tearing ourselves down.
Right.
There is a great deal of irresponsibility. And some of that irresponsibility goes back to what I was just talking about. This bill of goods that we've been sold as the thing that we need to possess that says that we are success.
Hmm.
When none of that is going with us.
See.
And it's not about acquiring stuff or things.
Uh-huh.
So it'd be nice because my God was a really detailed God. You know, you read those details of that scope, that engineering of the ark and of the temple. Oh my Lord. It'll blow your mind if you spend some time with it. And it said that it came from the mind of God to the servant, and so they built according to his instructions. But my question is this: have we been sold a bill of goods that was not for us?
Mm.
Have we bought into and invested into things? And it's not that you can't have those things, but where are you putting your energy? And for what purpose do we ignore it? Because we have a whole generation of children or
mm-hmm.
of adults who were the product of the era of the crack epidemic.
Right.
Their lives don't look as productive as adults could be. Who's responding to that?
Well, you do know that that was all orchestrated anyway via the white supremacy and
certainly.
The white systems in place.
Certainly.
Because
certainly.
You had the
because
crack,
somebody,
the crack epidemic.
Right, because at some
and
point,
you had the opiate,
at,
yeah.
But look where it came right behind. It came right behind the Civil Rights Movement. See, these Negroes got too big for their britches.
Right.
So we're gonna have to start wiping some of this out.
So we start pumping crack into the community.
Yes.
But see, what they didn't understand, and it goes back to what I said earlier in the show. You intentionally pumped crack and drugs into the black communities, and it devastated us. But see, because white supremacy has no checks and balances, it seeps into your neighborhoods because we are not islands. And so what
right.
you design for our destruction ultimately turns out and it destroys you too.
Yeah. And now it's a problem. So
no,
much
no, no,
so
no, no, no.
that
now it's a crisis.
It's a crisis
right.
so much so that we're willing to put needles to reverse needles to reverse overdose in the hands of addicted people to bring
mm-hmm.
you back to life.
Oh, yeah.
Why do they do that?
Well, they do that.
I'm sorry.
I'll tell you why they do that.
I get the idea behind it, but it's, don't you know it's kind of mind-boggling?
It's extremely mind-boggling since now
because
we are being urged.
At one point, if you're using with a person and they die, you could be convicted.
Wait a minute.
Of a crime.
No.
Now
on
we
the
making
anniversary.
You responsible. Now we making you
no.
responsible for reversing their overdose.
Listen
huh?
to me.
Huh?
On the anniversary of my father's death, I am here to tell you that my father did 5 years in prison because a white boy came to him asked him to do he know where the hookup is for some heroin. My dad showed him where the hookup was. Okay, this white boy came from St. Joe to Benton Harbor. If you know anything about Southwest Michigan, you understand how racially divided Benton Harbor and St. Joe is. This boy crossed the bridge, came down, asked my daddy to help him get the hookup. My daddy helped him get the hookup. He shot himself up. OD, my daddy broke the number one rule of drug addicts, which is if your partner OD'ing, you don't take them to the hospital. But what my daddy do? Drop that boy off at the hospital, and he got charged. 5 years, attempted manslaughter. That's actual and factual. So now we are taught to sympathize because it's no longer black. Because the communities are no longer black. So it's no longer an epidemic. It's a crisis. And we're supposed to be compassionate toward white victims of opioid abuse and prescription drug abuse. And I say, wait a minute, methamphetamines, how can we help meth addicts? The same way you helped crack addicts. Lock them up. That's how you help them. You do exactly what you did to us. But see, they're not going to do that because time and time again, they show us that we are not human and they are in their system. Now, this next question right here, this next group of questions is deep. He asks,
Lord Jesus,
what is sin? Like, how does God define sin versus how man defines sin? And does sin in and of itself still exist today, and aren't all people sinners today?
Let's start.
The last question before you answer that is, how does God deal with sin, and what is his penalty for sin? So what say you?
Okay, let's work backwards. God said he will show mercy on whom he will show mercy and compassion on whom he will show compassion. I ain't got nothing to do with that. He said, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That's
right.
Bible. I ain't got nothing to do with that either. Do people still sin today? Based on the definition of sin in the Bible talks about names, seven deadly sins. People usually don't want to talk about that because, you know, those seven deadly sins are, those seven deadly sins are, things that we don't want to deal with. So when we start talking about gluttony, nobody want to believe that gluttony is a deadly sin. You know, like, what you mean? gluttony is a deadly sin. Pride. See, we focus on behaviors. Lead to the behaviors. Does that make sense? So when the seven deadly sins talk about pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath, and sloth.
Right.
We don't want to talk about hate that came out of pride. We don't want to talk about greed or covetousness that came out of pride. See, we like to talk about the thing that we could see and the thing that we can, the behavior. We don't see the root. So when I look down on the ground and I see the flower come up or the weed, I liken that to a behavior, something that I can see. The thing that I can't see is what it came out of. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So there are some roots. All these behaviors that we call sin are really the results of one of these seven deadly sins. So we don't like to talk about lust being the root issue of whether it's covetousness, whether it's we talk about King David, and King David standing on that balcony, and he looked down, and he saw Uriah's wife, and she looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that, and she looked so good that he lusted after her. He lusted after her so hard that he set her husband up on the front line knowing he would be slaughtered. Second-degree murder, we would call it today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that we don't want to talk about. We don't want to talk about the fact that dissatisfaction in your marriage or displeasure or not getting your needs met or having, rather that was your partner moving in sloth and not responding to your needs, or you being greedy and lustful and needing more and being dissatisfied with what you have. We don't talk about adultery coming out of that. We just talk about adultery. So if it's a product of these seven things, it's sin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Apostle Paul talked about everything ain't sin. It just ain't expedient. It's not a good thing for me to do. So there's some rule. Then you start getting into morality and applying wisdom to situations. So it might not be sinful for me to eat pork, but it might be sinful for me to eat it to the point that I can't, my blood pressure is out of control because now I'm hurting myself. And
right.
If I'm not being a good steward over the body God gave me, is that now sin? It's rooted in one of these seven deadly sins. So that's how I perceive the Bible to define sin. Yes, we all sin.
Mm-hmm.
God's sin was death, but we had a redeemer. So now your penalty for sin is not accepting what Christ has done, the redemptive power, because he gave his life. He gave up heaven for our earthly home, and then he did this earthly thing, and then he became the perfect sacrifice, is what the Bible teaches us. And so now, you know, there are scholars or theologians who say, well, people don't die, go to hell because of sin, because Christ said he didn't come to condemn the law, but that through him the law might be fulfilled. Do we continue in sin hoping that grace should abound? No, because you ain't got nothing to do with who he has mercy on and who he has compassion on. That's a God decision. But rejecting Christ and what he's done for you so that you don't have to either live this life or access hell. And it's a great deal of people. The number of people who reject the theology of Christian of Christ
mm-hmm.
as Redeemer is increasing. The Bible talks about hell enlarging itself. And so people say, well, this is hell right here on earth. They don't believe that there's an afterlife. And they don't believe that there's an afterlife where there's heaven or hell. You got to get to where you get to on your own. I'm not the person to push you. If you come to me on a one-on-one, we can have a conversation about where you. I don't believe in pushing people. I believe in living a life and making people interested or intrigued by the life I live. But there are those who believe that the sin, the greatest sin now, is rejecting Jesus Christ. And the penalty for that sin is eternal separation from the Father versus the opportunity to live and reign with him.
So,
and I don't know who sent you these questions, but me and him gonna have to have a talk.
I know, because this ain't it. I know, but wait, listen. So I agree. The question was, are all sinners today? And I guess my answer to that would be yes. Okay? I would say yes, sin does still exist today. And that's evident because of what we see, you know, going on with police brutality, what we see going on with the intentional poisoning of people in Flint and the limited access to clean water, healthy food, and the intentional systems that are set up to, you know, to allow people to be exposed to cancer and all of these things. So does sin exist? Yes, sin exists today. So then he goes on to ask, who is Lucifer?
The Bible describes him as one of the angels at one point,
mm-hmm.
who decided that he was going to rise, do a rebellion in the heavens towards God because he wanted to be God. And God was like, no. So you can go. And as always, somebody always has followers, right? So it says that him and a third of the angels that inhabited heaven at that point, they were kicked out of heaven with him. But his name was Lucifer from the beginning. He didn't become Satan until he transitioned. And we see that this is not the first time God changes the name of a being or that existed. So Abram turned to Abraham when he accepted his calling. Jacob's name was turned to Israel, so you have the children of Israel. When he wrestled mm-hmm. with the angel through the night, his name was changed. And so it's not uncommon for names to be changed in the Bible
mm-hmm.
based on acceptance of your calling. We experience that from, you know, when you talk about more science. I remember my uncle explaining to me not to have the slave name. And so you'll see some of our brothers and sisters, when they ascribe to vascular culture or religious belief system, a changing of their name. It's not uncommon. But his name was changed from Lucifer to Satan in the fall.
Okay, Bible
says he was a beautiful being.
And so his desire for power and control?
Yeah, he rose up with, but here's the thing. People want to argue every time something bad happens, and I take really big, it's a bone I have to, what happened? Why did God?
Mm-hmm.
Bible says that God created good and evil. I am the Lord. I did these things. Also tells us that he repents of the day that he made man. And he don't repent nowhere else in the Bible but at the time that he made man. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a hard time with the concept of Satan as evil, because we have a need to believe in a God that's good. So we can't see him as something that was created by God, because a good God wouldn't do that. And a good, loving God wouldn't send people to hell. And a good, loving God wouldn't allow children to be, I created good and evil, choose you this day. So the gentleman that he is allows him to allow you to have choice, free will. Because he's not a slave master. That was the doing of man. That wasn't God's doing. It was never intended for us to be, he wants you to come of your own free will. Whosoever will, let him come. And he'll be in fellowship with him. So we don't want to think about the concept of Satan, because then that means we have to think, or we have to deal with our thought processes about God and who he is. And it's easier just to blame him for the stuff that went wrong, because he should have stopped it. But we don't want to take responsibility for how our world got to where it is. Just like we don't want to take responsibility for how global warming got to where it is, but guess what is happening?
You said that in the Word, God says that he created good and evil.
For you last time, and I don't
mm-hmm.
have it in front of me this time, I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine.
But yeah.
So if good and evil were designed and orchestrated by God, then our oppression is sanctioned by God? Because it's definitely
doesn't mean that oppression is sanctioned by God. It means that there was something present in order for you to choose to make a choice, so that you didn't have to be with him if you didn't want to be. Of being man, from the fall of man because of Adam. But what Adam needed to access for his fall was forever present with him before Eve came on the scene. So it's not a matter of God created good and evil, thus he must sanction oppression, thus he must have been okay with slavery, thus, no. He puts things out there, you have your choice, you make your choice. We make choices on a daily basis. Why is it hard to believe that we have to choose between good and evil? Again, go back to the seven daily sins and things that are rooted or come out of that. So get past the behavior and go back to the root, or get past the flower and dig down into the root. Every day you make choices that either negatively impact you or positively impact you. On the break, I just had a choice that negatively impacted me. I did not need another lemon bar, but I ate it.
Okay. I struggle with that, Rhonda. I struggle with that because I'm going to leave that alone. I'm going to leave that alone for another time in another show. Because it just got in my head so philosophical and so deep. Have you ever had a thought that was so deep that you just said, you know what, this is exceeding my medication limitations in this moment, and I have to have time to process that thought. So
Tower of Babel.
In all good
conscience, Tower of Babel, you're having a Tower of Babel experience.
That's exactly what's happening right now. And so where I'm at with that, because I have worked on understanding my limitations, and I have worked on you know, knowing when I need to step back and do some more thinking and thoughtfulness, and I just can't just flippantly go into where I was going to go.
I appreciate for all you for backing up.
Yeah, I did. I backed up quick. Did you hear it? It was like beep, beep, beep. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not going down that road right now because I can't do it. Okay, last but not least, the last two questions. He did ask, does Lucifer still reign? And I would say yes, because he is the prince of this world. So, and yes, he does still reign. But his last question is two-part. What is worship, and is the modern church worshiping God the creator, or are they still worshiping the covenant God of the Jews? Deep question. Did you hang up on me? Where you go? Did you just? I am having so many problems this evening. Rhonda? She once again got cut off. And let me see if I can get it. If I can't get her back, then I'm going to go ahead and wrap the show up. Hopefully we can pick this back up. If I can't get her back in, then that's what we're going to do. I can't get her back in, so. Let me see.
Okay, she's back, sis. Hello? Hello? All right, she just wrapped up the show.
She just wrapped up the show?